Game on 2FM with Green Firm. Fuel your day with Green Firm's new high-protein cooked chicken breast fillet. 100% natural and packed with flavour.
Thanks to Jenny Green, it's Monday the 20th of September and this is Game On. Coming up today, Stephen Kelly and Alan Cawley on all the weekend soccer, including David Moyes' noble call.
Mark Noble, who's just come on. He's not touched the ball with his foot yet. He's touched it with his hands. He faces David De Gea. We're deep in added time. Mark Noble, who's just come on, steps up and he fails from the spot. David De Gea keeps him out.
Fiona Hayes will review Ireland's return to form in the Rugby World Cup qualifiers and we'll hear from Irish try machine Bevan Parsons.
Goes down just short. Day moves it left. Flood moves it further left and Parsons is over. Ireland get the try. Well, they benefited from a big defensive effort early in the half. They hung on in there. And no surprise, it's Bevan Parsons who crosses for the opening try of the game.
Plus, we'll hear from Vera Powell as the girls in green get ready to take on Australia in Tala tomorrow. And also we'll hear from Team Europe as they gather for the Ryder Cup.
Game on 2FM.
Now, if you want to get in touch, you can text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM. Alan Cawley is with me here in studio. Al, how are you?
I'm good, Marie. Yourself? Good weekend?
Yeah, very good. I finished it off last night, as I've started to do a lot recently, by watching PSG.
You're going full on PSG, aren't you?
Yeah. Well, it's handy it's on a Sunday night. They tend to play a lot of their games on Sunday night. So it was interesting last night, though, just seeing the whole dynamic of Messi and Pochettino. He was taken off with 75 minutes on the clock. It was 1-1. The game was tied, and he decided to take off Lionel Messi, which isn't something that you'd usually see. Now, they did go on to win it. Icardi got a header just at the death across from Mbappe. But just if you were to compare the impact that Messi is having in PSG compared to the impact that Ronaldo is having at Manchester United, they seem really, really different. It was a frustrated Messi walking off the pitch last night, whereas when I think of the end of the Manchester United game last night, it was Ronaldo jumping up on top of David De Gea, like just so happy. So it's just like, what do you think of how they're both getting on?
What are you trying to say here, Marie? Come on.
Well, what I'm trying to say is that maybe Messi is suffering because of the amount of individuals that are in PSG, whereas before he'd always be in a situation where everything would revolve around him. Mm. But he's playing with some of the biggest stars in the world, some of the biggest egos in the world, and we've seen them in the past, especially in those Champions League games last year, the big stage, where PSG found it really difficult to unite as a team. And, you know, they were petulant, they were like children at times. I think the jury's really out on Neymar, really, when it comes to his attitude. Mbappe is someone that I think maybe over the last little while has changed a bit, but you would think that he would be more of a team player. But looking at them at the moment, they don't seem like they're gelling at all.
Yeah, but to be fair, if you're comparing them, what are we, a week in? Ronaldo obviously playing last week against Newcastle, then he scored during the week as well and scored again at the weekend, and he has had an unbelievable impact. And even at 36, he looks so sharp, so fit. He's always obviously fit and looks after himself, but you're right, he's had a phenomenal impact. And yesterday I thought he was absolutely brilliant, even in terms of not just the goals but just the threat that he provides and that he offers. And he's so sharp looking, and he'll always have that hunger and desire to score goals. But he was really, really good, and he has had an amazing impact. I'm very much a Messi man, as you know, so please don't be writing off Lionel Messi after one game, Marie. But I would say, to be fair to Pochettino, and what I like, I love that in a manager that will make the big call and the brave call. And it would have been so easy for a manager just to leave Messi on in that case. And we've seen it with managers. This is my criticism of Solskjaer, and obviously that reared its head on during the week in the European game when he should have taken off Ronaldo. And the question mark is, does he have the courage to make the big calls? And I don't think he does. Whereas for Pochettino to do that with Messi, his first home game as well, that's a brave call to do. And the fact that he's Argentinian as well, you think there might be some sort of loyalty towards him, and it would have been the easy decision to keep him on and keep him on side. to take him off is a brave, brave call, and it was the right call to do as well if he wasn't playing well. And I love that in a manager, but please don't be writing off Lionel Messi.
So what you're saying though is if a vacancy did come up at Manchester United,
they should have went for him anyway.
Yeah.
Pochettino should have went for that. And when they had the opportunity, we were saying it, you know, they should have. I'm not sure why they didn't. They've remained loyal to Solskjaer. Obviously, we all know the jury's very much out on him, and this is the season he will have to deliver. We'll probably get into the Premier League chat later on, but I won't start giving him stick just yet.
Well, another thing, another, I suppose, point of difference as well is the fact that Ronaldo has moved around so much. So he's used to just going into dressing rooms, doing his thing, adapting to the environment, being able to block out everything else that's going on around him. Doesn't really care who's in charge, is still going to go and do what he does. Whereas this is really new territory for Messi, and it is going to take him a little while to settle into that new environment.
Yeah, that's a fair point, Maria, and it's a good point because it is, it's totally new to him, and his whole life was Barcelona since he was a kid, and that's all he knew, and not just in terms of the team and the club, his lifestyle and where he was living and all that kind of stuff. So the fact that it has been big changes, uprooting the kids, and there could be school issues, there could be all sorts, you don't know what's going on, just because he's obviously loads of money and everybody thinks it's all rosy in the garden. He's a human being like everybody else, and he has to deal with those problems as well, if there is any problems as such, in terms of adapting to your new surroundings with the kids and all sorts. So maybe that's something, but as I say, it's only the first game. I'm sure he'll come good. He's already had a relationship with Neymar, and so there'll be no issues there. The Mbappe one is the interesting one, because obviously he's looking to get out of the club, but he's had a great start to the season, Mbappe, and I think the question, or what everybody is kind of suggesting, and they're probably right, he's the next one to take over from Messi and Ronaldo and Mbappe, and it's just interesting to see if his trajectory of his career so far keeps going the way it's going. He's well on track to take over from them.
We're going to be talking a little bit later on as well about the Republic of Ireland women's team playing against Australia tomorrow in Tallaght Stadium. Tallaght Stadium is fast becoming the home now for Ireland, for Irish women's football, really. The FAI confirmed that the cup final is going to take place at Tallaght on the 21st of November. It's going to be broadcast on RT2 television, which is absolutely brilliant. How do you feel about the women who maybe grew up wanting to play in the Aviva Stadium, playing their big cup final in Tallaght Stadium? I know it has happened before, but still.
Yeah, we've had this chat before, Marie, and I think it's a good thing. Have to be honest, we've obviously covered the last five or six FAI Cup finals and the games where the women's match was on before the men's final. I don't think that does the women's game or the girls involved in it any favours. And I don't mean that in a disrespectful way. Obviously, it's a huge honour for them, and they're there on merit, and that's where the final is. I just think in front of an empty stadium, I know it is empty at 12 o'clock on a Sunday, I don't think that's fair on the girls. Whereas if you could make it a standalone fixture, which is what they've done now and having it in Tallaght, I think the night before the Men's Cup final on the Saturday, I think that's a better way of doing it, and maybe filling out Tallaght Stadium with 6,000, 7,000, 8,000, whatever the case may be, and making it a showpiece day for the girls. I always felt when the women's final was on before the men's, it felt as though they were always playing second fiddle to the men's game. So even though it is in the Aviva and everybody wants to play in the Aviva, girls, boys, whoever, we all want to play there, I just feel to have it in Tallaght, and as you say, the fact that the women's international matches are in Tallaght as well, there's a bit of a connection there now, as you say, becoming the home for the women's team or whatever. I just think that's a far better fit right now for the girls, and to make it a showpiece day. I know the final wasn't great last year because it was very one-sided in Tallaght, but I think if you're maybe the way the league is competitive this year, if you were to get a Shelburne and a Piemont in the final or whatever the case may be, and it was a real competitive match live on telly, 7,000, 8,000 at it, I think that's a far better day for the girls rather than playing in an empty stadium at 12 o'clock on a Sunday.
Yeah, I think probably like there are going to be a lot of the women playing in the final who would probably prefer to have it in the Aviva Stadium. But I think as this connection grows deeper and young girls are watching now the international games on the television and seeing them in Tallaght Stadium, that they will eventually have that connection with Tallaght Stadium as well, and see it as, you know, it's kind of part of the can't see, can't be, and they will see the likes of Katie McKay playing in Tallaght Stadium in the green jersey, or Amber Barrett, Rhianna Jarrett, whoever it is, and they will want to emulate their heroes by playing there. And likewise, they'll be looking at these cup finals, and that'll be the venue and the backdrop and all the rest, but there's still a cohort of maybe the older players, the more mature players, who would just love to have their shot in the Aviva Stadium, and I get that as well. So I do see there are two sides to that argument.
Yeah, well, from your point of view, like obviously you've played, Marie, and you're ingrained in the women's game and promoting it, whatever it be, soccer, Gaelic, rugby, whatever the case may be, and obviously the game, all the games are developing at a rate of knots. It's brilliant to see the way they're all developing. But from your point of view, say, if you were a player Would you like to play in front of an empty crowd in the Aviva on a Sunday at 12 o'clock?
I think I just love to have play in the Aviva. Like, I suppose just from growing up and seeing the football that I got to see on television when I was a kid was men's football and seeing games in Lansdowne Road at that time and having the experience of being in those dressing rooms, running out onto the tunnel. I know the crowds aren't going to be there, but sometimes, well, I think most of the time actually when it comes to women's sport, you're so used to not playing in front of crowds that it's the people that matter to you, that they're there, that they get to see you. So like playing in somewhere like the Aviva Stadium or Croke Park in front of your mom and your dad or the coach that drove you to all those training sessions and you know, people that were there with you when there was only 10 watching a game, which is the case for many of the women now who are playing in our National League. I can see why they would want to play there because they're not used to having crowds anyway, so the crowds aren't a big thing. It's the people that matter that they're getting to see their daughter, their sister, whoever it is, playing on the Aviva, because the Aviva is special to everybody.
Of course,
it is,
but that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, and in time, Tala will be as well. I just I can see why it isn't right now.
Unless, I don't know if the FEI, if they could come up with a situation where it becomes a standalone fixture, the final in the Aviva, and have it on a Friday night or Saturday night. Like, obviously, the men's final was played behind closed doors last year, empty stadium. So if the women's final became a standalone fixture, and if you got a crowd of 1,500, 2,000, whatever the case may be, but it was actually their official cup final in the stadium, I think that would be much better. I just don't think it works well for them, and it does them a disservice when they're literally playing second fiddle to the men's final.
Yeah, well, I think it's probably as well different to the GAA. You'd often have the minor games beforehand and the crowds would be in for them, whereas the crowds aren't coming into the Aviva because it's on too early, because we had that situation a few years back with the extra time and
that was just bad planning.
Yeah, and exactly.
But I think what's different with the Gaelic, though, it's all women's sport on that one day.
Yeah, no, that's true as well.
You know, so it's not like the women's final is on before the men's final. Yeah.
But I would have no issue with a women's final being on before a men's final because I think that works at times as well, just having the eyeballs, having people see it. But if the crowd isn't in, which we have seen so often, it's
well, 12, yeah, unless you could have it, I don't know when you could have it. Honestly, as I say, I've been there, Marie, for them all, 12 o'clock, and it doesn't do the girls any favours.
Yeah, it's too early. Okay, just one other thing I wanted to chat to you about, Al, before we move on to the Premier League. We will be hearing from Vera Powell a little bit later on as well with Tony O'Donoghue. But just today, or overnight, Mayo GAA released a statement. They called it the end of season position statement. And in it, they hit out at the personal attacks on players and management. And it's just really, really disappointing that the Mayo County Board have to issue the statement. When you think of everything that Mayo have done, okay, they didn't have a great final. Tyrone ended up winning that and being the better team on the day, but the fact that they have to release this statement just shows how deep these personal attacks are on the players and how difficult it must be for them, for young people, for the managers as well, the fact that that they're being abused online because of a game of football.
I've never heard of an end of season position statement, Marie, but if that's what it is, it's new. It's a new one on me. But maybe it is just aimed at the fact that there's no place for this.
And there's a few other things in the statement now as well. Okay. By the way, they have to clarify coaches, and they said they're going to be doing that in time and all the rest. But that just formed part of the statement.
Yeah, well, obviously we all watched the final, and everyone over the years, I think, has kind of grown a soft spot for Mayo in terms of the fact that they've come so close, and I've often been on here and saying, how do they keep coming back and keep coming back? It must be so hard, but they have done and they've been brilliant. I didn't have much sympathy after this final, Marie, because they didn't play very well, and I felt Tyrone as well didn't get the credit they deserved in the build up to the final, because I thought they were great against Kerry and they were obviously brilliant in the final as well, and fully deserving of it. The abuse that came after for the players, and in particular one player, I know that player quite well and he's a great lad. And there's no place for that whatsoever, Marie, absolutely not. At the end of the day, these lads are giving their all for their team, their county, whatever the case may be, and the last thing they want is to go on Twitter and some idiot giving them abuse after a match, after them losing the final. And unfortunately, that's the world we live in with social media now. We all know it's a bit of a cesspit, but certainly from the players' point of view, that's the last thing anybody wants. So there's no place for that. If that's the reason behind the statement, you said there's other things in as well, but that's the reason why behind the statement, hopefully people listen, whether they will or not. There'll always be idiots in the world, but whether they will or not, I'm not so sure, but there's no place for really giving players abuse.
Okay, well, we're going to move on from that now because Stephen Kelly is with us now on the line. Stephen, just before you came on there, we were talking about the difference in the impacts that Messi and Ronaldo have made for their respective clubs. subs. Messi substituted last night when the game was in the balance, the PSG game was in the balance against Lyon, whereas Ronaldo seems to be rising to the challenge of scoring goals for Manchester United.
Yeah, I think with both of them, it's different leagues, different setups, and you know, Ronaldo's coming back to a club where he's a living legend, and you know, he's hit the ground running, and I don't think anybody could doubt him because that's what he does, he scores goals. Messi going to France, a lot of superstars currently in that side as well, and you know, I think to anybody to be thinking that at some point he's not going to turn it on and be this magician that we've grown to see for the last 20 years basically, I think you can't write him off. He's going to be up there pushing for a Ballon d'Or, pushing for a Champions League, pushing for a Player of the Year. You know, that will come. This is Messi. He's just a phenomenon. And I think, you know, it's early days yet. Yeah, he's not got off to the start he would have liked, but I'm sure at some point it's going to come.
Well, I'm going to see him play in about 6 weeks, so if he could turn it on by around then, I'd be pretty happy about that. We are going to start with Manchester United because we've got some texts in with people looking forward to hearing Alan's thoughts on the weekend's performance. So, Alan, look, we have to start really with David De Gea's save and that whole situation with bringing Mark Noble on for the penalty, which just, I suppose, hindsight is everything. David Moyes did defend his decision today to bring him on and pointed that out, that if things had gone well, then it would have been grand. What did you think of the way it all played out?
Yeah, it was certainly dramatic, and it was a great ending to the game. The game wasn't the best, Marie, but I have to say, to be fair to United, they did look stronger in that second half and looked like the more likely. But still, the performance, for me, kind of still more question marks around the whole thing. You just don't know what you're going to get from this Man United team. Like, when I watch Liverpool, I know exactly what way they're going to play, how they're going to turn up, how they're going to approach the game. Man City the same, Chelsea the same, and for all different reasons. When I watch Man United, I just don't know. It's very much individuals, very much off the cuff. You're hoping for a bit of magic. Now, obviously, it's Ronaldo. You're hoping he'll turn up. Bruno Fernandes, whoever the case may be. Pogba had no influence on the game yesterday. And the big problem area is still that midfield. And if you think just in this week alone, Marie, the three games that they've played, if you go back to last weekend, the European game, and obviously yesterday's match, they've played three different pairings in each match. And obviously yesterday it was McTominay and Fred. During the week it was Van de Beek and Fred. And last week it was Matic and Pogba. So even Solskjaer is nearly highlighting the fact that that's an area where he doesn't know himself what to do because he keeps chopping and changing with it every week. Now, last season it was always McTominay and Fred were the tried and tested and the most reliable ones when it came to the big games, that he could always go to them. Maybe that was a sign of going forward, that's what he'll do because he played those two yesterday. But they're still not the answer by any means. And you look at West Ham yesterday, even though without Antonio, they still cause United plenty of problems. Harry Maguire was poor. Going forward, they'll always score goals, and even more so now with Ronaldo and lots of firepower. I just think they're very susceptible to going the other way and defensively. And whatever about playing against West Ham and Newcastle, when you come up against the big boys, they'll obviously suffer in that department. So it was a great win to grind it out in the end, and obviously a late winner, Lingard coming on and the save. So, and those wins can kind of really galvanise teams as well. When you score, you see the celebrations at the end, even though it's so early in the season, even a big win like that, and it's big 3 points because West Ham are a decent team, but to me there's still so many question marks.
Yeah, definitely, and I think like a lot of teams would have looked to what West Ham did yesterday, which was pretty simple really, just to be well organised to try and frustrate them. And
that's the thing, Marie, it's a great point, because I looked at the match yesterday and all they are is just well organised and balanced, West Ham, and I'm looking at Man United and they're so imbalanced and they don't look a bit organised. So work it out.
Stephen, what about Mark Noble though, and that decision to bring him on? Like, obviously looking at it now, it does seem ridiculous, but in the moment I could probably see what Moyes was thinking. Like, he has somebody like him on the bench and he has the stats to back it up, but realistically, without having warmed up, touching the ball, all the rest, was it as crazy as it seems now, do you think?
Yeah, I think, like I said, retrospectively, you're looking back and you think it seems like an absolute crazy decision to bring a player on that hasn't touched the ball. There's lads that have been in the game, played well, performed. I know Declan Rice has missed a couple, but, you know, players that have been in the game and, you know, got fresh legs in them, they feel confident that they've had a good performance, they might actually just volunteer to step up and take it. But you look at David Moyes and his position and his mindset, and he's thinking, I've got a player here who would probably have no qualms to step on and take it. And you know what, last season, 2020, he was like second in the world in penalty rankings for putting them away conversion rate. So, you know, you're looking to someone who's tried and tested. It's not like it's, you know, there's a lot of comparisons people are trying to make between here and the England game, but it's completely different because you're talking about young lads that have never taken penalties before to a player who takes penalties all the time and is a seasoned profession, goes about his business all the time and would have no issues or no lack of confidence stepping up and taking it. So I think it's easy to criticise it now, but was it the right decision? Obviously not because he missed, but I still think there's so many managers that would take that choice and put him on to do it.
I don't know. I don't know, Stephen. And of course, that is the, it's the toss of a coin. If he scores, nobody's even mentioned that. Obviously, people say, Moyes, exactly. Great decision. So, and that's the life of a manager. I suppose you live and die by these decisions. And Moyes is a very experienced manager and a very good manager. But I just felt, looking at it yesterday, and the magnitude of that game as well, bringing a lad on, and I know he has the stats and all those things, as you says, Marine, he's a very good penalty taker, experience on his side, all those things. But coming on cold like that, he probably wasn't even warmed up. Probably wasn't even warming up because you're into injury time. He's probably sitting on the bench enjoying the last few minutes of the game thinking, I'm not even going to come on today. And then the next thing, they get a penalty and he throws him on to take it. So I thought it was a bit of madness, to be honest with you. Rice obviously fancied it, went and grabbed the ball straight away. And I'm sure there was other lads on the pitch. Yarmolenko was on at that stage. He probably fancied it. So I thought it was a crazy decision. But to be fair to De Gea, now it was a poor enough penalty, but probably something I missed out on there initially when I was chatting, Marie, was De Gea has made a really good start to the season, and that should be highlighted as well. He has made a strong start. But in terms of Moyes and that decision, I thought it was crazy.
And Stephen, just on I was going to say about De Gea.
I think as well because of... Yeah, De Gea's penalties are not great as well. He's not got a great record of penalties.
2016 was the last time.
Yeah, brutal a penalty.
Yeah.
So,
he
you know, he's probably
him.
Thinking, yeah.
Was he's shocking the penalties, De Gea.
It wasn't yesterday, but...
of his, like, his reaction, like, you could see what it meant to him. And as Alan said there, Stephen, like, his start to the season, and obviously he's been under pressure and he's a lot going on as well, personally, but he seems to want to be there now and is stepping up.
Oh, he, you know, the saves he's made so far, he seems confident. He seems like he's more assured. The team around him, he's probably when you bring in defenders like Varane, I know they still look susceptible defensively, but when you bring in players like that in front of you, that's going to make him feel more confident as well as a goalkeeper. But, you know, he's gone through a rough patch, and there was the whole thing about the contract that seemed to throw him slightly, but he's still a very good goalkeeper. He's still top class, and he's capable of making wonderful saves. And I think that this season he started off well, and you would think that will continue. And maybe the bit of competition, sometimes that helps players.
Alan, just before we move on from Manchester United, I do want to mention Jesse Lingard, because it was an absolutely cracking goal, and he'd obviously had that mistake against Young Boys as well and then had tweeted about it, but it was a good one and he deserves a lot of credit for it.
If he's the answer, Marie, that's why they won't be winning the league. Honestly, I know he came on, he got a great goal, but he is absolutely not the answer, Jesse Lingard. 100%, I'm telling you.
I had a feeling you were going to say that.
You look at the players around the other teams, and I keep comparing them to other teams, and that's where we should be comparing him to. He is not the answer, Jesse Lingard. He should have been playing for West Ham yesterday. That's where he should be.
But and he all did the fans delighted when he was coming on applauding him.
And it was so obvious he was going to score, wasn't it? Honestly, when I saw him coming on, I said he will score. It was a great goal, to be fair to him, and he did do well, obviously, out on loan at West Ham. But I think he needs to go and play. Like, one player we haven't even mentioned yet, Marie, and they've spent 80 million on him, Sancho. And it's so obvious that we're United are struggling that midfield area. They didn't even need to buy Sancho. Why pay 80 million for him? He won't get a look in this year when you look at, because he won't drop Ronaldo, he won't leave out Fernandes, he won't leave out Pogba. You have Greenwood, you have Rashford to come back, you have Cavani. 80 million for Sancho.
Stephen, let's move on to Chelsea and Spurs. And I think, well, actually, it probably does tie in all this criticism that Alan has of Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. When you look at what happens when you bring in a manager like Thomas Tuchel, a team that have a lot of really good players, and the manager's a little bit inexperienced. But if you can bring in somebody like him, and when the game is in the melting pot, as it was yesterday, they were really struggling up until half-time, had no shots on target. Thomas Tuchel makes a few changes with the formation, brings on Kante, and look, three goals later, and they have completely overrun Spurs.
Yeah, and like that's what you're looking at, and everybody's just applauding what he's doing, because managers have to make tough decisions at tough times in a game, and it's make or break what way that game's going to go. And if he's not happy and he's spotted that the team are not performing in a certain way, but most people in that situation are probably thinking, we're not creating enough chances, we're not going forward enough, then they think, bring on another attacking player. But he's brought on N'Golo Kanté, and let's face it, like, he's brought on arguably one of the best midfielders in the world. So that's, you know, two things: the manager seeing the situation, changing it and making a bold decision to bring a player off at half time, taking off an attack-minded player and bringing on a midfielder because he felt they were getting overrun in the middle of the park. As soon as he did that, Tottenham lost complete control of the game. They had no passes into Kane. Kane was dropping deep in the midfield. They completely changed the aspect of it. They get two goals, they run away with it, and, you know, they just... Chelsea, they're a problem for teams. They're just formidable. Honestly, it's scary, the depth that they have. And you just look that, you know, the manager can make decisions, but he's not bringing on like for like. He's bringing on absolute superstars, and they're going to be so hard to beat.
Speaking of superstars, well, I've already written off Messi earlier in the show, so might as well write off Harry Kane now while I'm at it. He doesn't look like he wants to be there. Well, we know he doesn't want to be there, but he could at least try.
I can't believe you're writing off Messi and Harry Kane in the one night, in the space of 20 minutes. You've written off two of the best players that we've seen.
I have very high standards, okay? I like consistency when it comes to performance.
So, yeah, well, the problem with Kane, and this is why I was so adamant throughout all the shows we had pre-season leading up to it, he wanted to go, he wanted out. Obviously, it didn't happen for him for whatever reason, and Levy digging his heels in, or we don't, whatever went on behind the scenes. But now you have a player who doesn't want to be there. Now, he will be professional in terms of obviously go out and train and play and perform whatever, but he's nowhere near the level of what we're used to seeing Harry Kane. And that could be for two reasons, Marie. Obviously, for his own point of view, he's not playing well enough, but he's probably looking at the team, and he probably already had it in his head that he's done with this team. So he's looking around at the moment, and he's thinking, where's this team going? A new manager's come in. He already had it in his head that he was probably going to be with City and Guardiola, and thinking about the success he was going to have there. So it's very, very difficult for him at the moment. He is the captain. He's the captain of England. So he has to take some personal pride and professional pride and do his stuff. But as Stephen said, you're looking at him yesterday, and he has this thing where he just wants to drop deep. And if you're Thiago Silva or Christensen or any of them players yesterday, if you see Harry Kane on the halfway line and you're 30 yards deeper than that defending, you're laughing, you're absolutely delighted, saying to yourself, brilliant, leave him out there, he's no threat to us out there. So it's a tough one for him at the moment. It's a tough one for the manager, because of course the manager wants him, but he only wants him if he's the Harry Kane that we all know. He doesn't want him if he's the Harry Kane that's going through the motions. But Chelsea yesterday were absolutely brilliant, and that's what it goes back to in terms of the manager, Marie. Mason Mount, England international, up and coming superstar, bang, off, brings on Kante, makes the decision, makes the big decision, and they get the result, and Chelsea look so big. And so, and there was an interview afterwards with Tuchel that I absolutely loved. For all the world-class talent that he had, all he spoke about was hard work and energy and the lack of intensity in the first half. And Azpilicueta came out afterwards in an interview, and he says the manager devoured him at halftime. And that's what you need.
Yeah, for sure. And I have to say, I was really impressed with Chelsea, and I'm edging closer to thinking your prediction that they might be the league at the start of the season.
Yeah, they look strong.
Especially when you see Manchester City, Stephen, draw nil all with Southampton. I know there's a school of thought out there that them failing to sign a striker is an issue. Pep was asked about it after the game, and he said it was tiredness and not the fact that they don't have that out-and-out striker that caused them to have that stalemate with Southampton. What do you think?
You know, I think it's hard, because I think at this early part of the season to say that they're going to struggle with a striker, they didn't last year and they didn't have one, and you know they're in the same position now, only for they've strengthened when it comes to actually attacking options. So I think it's probably too early to judge. You know, Harry Kane absolutely would make a difference for them, especially to where he would play. He wouldn't be playing deep, he'd be playing up front in the box, and they'd have 10 people assisting him because they're all capable of creating chances for somebody. But they looked leggy, didn't look as fluid as they normally do. They didn't pull Southampton ragged the way they do teams, and their interchanging of positions just wasn't the same as what we're used to seeing from City. So it was a poor day from them, but I don't think it's a factor at this stage. I still don't think that you can make an assumption that they're going to struggle without a striker, because they're still capable of scoring off. They still created chances yesterday. They had one ruled off for offside. And, you know, they got lucky with the penalty decision as well, I think, with Walker. But I'd say the amount of chances they create, someone in that team will be able to put them away, whether it's Sterling or Gundogan or Grealish.
Looking at, obviously we mentioned Kane there and the body language, Marie, and obviously he's devastated probably that he didn't get the move. Guardiola seems every bit as devastated that he didn't get Harry Kane. It's like a little sulky couple and the parents won't allow them to be together even though they want to be together.
Well, I don't know, did anyone see Haaland's goal over the weekend?
Brilliant.
It's just unbelievable. Oh. Like, imagine being able to get him or Harry Kane. Like,
well, Kane was the one that wanted, and Kane, he wanted to go. Guardiola wanted him. It was all written in the stars, and Daniel Levy, the headmaster that he is, wouldn't allow him.
Al, I know on Friday we talked about the whole situation with the fans and Pep getting criticised for asking more of them to turn up. Well, they actually listened, because they had 52,000, over 52,000, their biggest attendance of the season.
In the library. 50,000 in the library is a lot, Marie. It is. That's what it's like, that Etihad Stadium. He can call for as many. They could have 100,000. That's just, I don't know, that, like, that's never going to be the kind of the raucous atmosphere that you would get at other clubs that are known for it, or the magical nights in Europe at Anfield or Old Trafford, wherever the case may be. So there was all the people there, yeah, but you still want them obviously to win the matches, and they struggled at the weekend, and I think it just gives the other teams probably a little bit of hope as well. And we are in for the one thing we have to say, Marie, you look at the team so far and the start that we've had to the Premier League, and it's going to be so competitive, and I think it will be really good for all of us tuning in. Liverpool, who you have even mentioned as well, have had a brilliant, brilliant start, and they look so strong.
And so too do Brighton, winning against Leicester 2-1 yesterday. And look, I think, Stephen, everyone is going to be talking about how good they are, but at the same time, I think everybody will be delighted as well for Shane Duffy and just how well he's been playing. Like, how did he do that? How did he turn around his career, really, when you think about what was going on up in Celtic, and for him to come back and to be now such a mainstay in that team, Stephen?
It's just about taking the opportunities. You know, he probably felt, he felt he wasn't going to get a chance again to play for Brighton, and then circumstances arise, a player gets sold, a player gets injured, and then it turns out you're going to end up starting. And it's just about taking those opportunities with both hands, staying fit, staying true to yourself. I think the summer where Ireland helped him, because he came in and played in the game and he actually did really well the last match of that campaign. And I think that would have given him confidence going off of the summer, coming back in pre-season. I'm sure he would have worked hard through the summer. I'm sure he would have come back fit into pre-season, looking healthy and lean and trying to prove a point. And if it wasn't going to be there, he was going to be hoping somewhere else. So for him, he wanted to get kickstarted. And it's all about mental attitude. It's all about mental strength, you know. And when you get those opportunities, being able to take them. And the team as well, the fact that the team around them are doing well, it's not just him, it's everybody else. They're scoring goals. Like last season, they couldn't put the ball in the back of net for love nor money. They couldn't score. And already they've won, four games. They only won 9 last season. They almost feel like they're going to stay up already, I think. It's been such a transformation for them. The fact that they're scoring goals and they were creative and they got chances, but last season they had no one to put in the back of the net, and at the moment they're feeling so confident.
Marie, on that as well with Duffy, I've actually heard, because you look at his performances with Celtic, and obviously he struggled and there was a lot going on in his personal life at the time as well, but I actually heard the club weren't great at all with him. It was through COVID times, and I heard he was in a place where he was staying on his own, that they weren't very, like, in terms of people welcoming him in and looking after him, that he was basically just shunted into a place wherever he was staying. And I know there's personal responsibility in terms of when it comes to performances, but you think of a lad who was grieving at the time, going through a tough spell. Obviously, he's at the club where you think of where he's from and how hard he was trying to impress. Whereas now, I just feel he's back at Brighton, and I think he posted about it on Instagram or one of the things, that he's back in his happy place where he feels at home amongst friends and people. Like you mentioned even, like, people forget about these players because maybe they earn so much money, that they're actual just human beings like us all. They have feelings. Like, if you go into a room on your own at night, you can be lonely. Like, that's normal. That's a normal feeling to have. And sometimes, like, especially when things are going against you or you're having a rough time of it, you want people around you to support you. I don't think he had that support network or base whatsoever at Celtic, from what I've heard.
Well, it's really good to see him doing so well, and also Brighton as well. Not so good, though, Stephen, for Leicester City. Look, I know there was a lot of VAR controversy, and they probably could argue that they it was a game that they should have won, but still, they haven't had a great start to the season.
No, and I think Leicester, you know, on the back of last season, the FA Cup win, and they're in Europe now again, falling away from the Champions League spots. It's going to be a tough season for them because the Europa League, it's not easy. It's not easy to go back-to-back, you know, games on a tour, like then away. You know, I did it with Fulham, and you go from the start of the season, we did the first qualifying round, you go all the way through, 62 matches. But the difference between us and Fulham was our expectancy level, and when it came to the Premier League, was probably finishing the top 10, where Leicester are expecting now to be pushing for a Champions League spot again. So to be able to fight on both fronts is difficult. They've got the players, but they don't have a huge squad. They don't have a really in-depth squad. And I think it's going to tell. And some of the players, you know, like Zavardi and stuff and all, who are getting on a bit, still flying, but, you know, you have to manage these and make sure you put them into the games that's going to best suit them and best, you know, best give the team a chance of winning. So I think, yeah, they've struggled so far. I can see them being down on the bottom list. There's teams that are worse than them when it comes to what they have on the pitch. But, yeah, it's been a tough start for them.
Another win for Arsenal, though. 1-0 against Burnley.
I will skip on.
It's terrible to be in the situation, though, that like you're getting to the end of a Premier League chat and it's like, well, will I mention Arsenal? Will I not? It's terrible for them. Like,
yeah, it's good to be fair to Arteta. I know they've bounced back now with a couple of wins and he probably needed that badly. He absolutely needed that badly because it was such a dire start. But that's football. Things turn around quite quickly. Marie, obviously Spurs won their first three and everybody thinks it's all good and they're on looking upwards, whereas then you lose your next two and it's all doom and gloom, whereas Arsenal were the opposite. They obviously lost their first three and then they have two back-to-back wins and they're looking upwards now. So that's a huge game. They're facing off against each other, I think, next weekend. Massive game. But in terms of Arteta, again, going back to the Jesse Lingard thing, if he's the answer, Marie.
Right, on that note, we will take a break. Stephen Kelly, thank you as always. Alan Cawley, stay with me because we have plenty more to get through.
With Green Firm. Fuel your day with Green Firm's high-protein cooked chicken breast fillets. 100% natural and packed with flavour.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back. So Ireland's fight for a place in the 2021 Women's Rugby World Cup is back on track after they defeated Italy over the weekend 15-7. I'm delighted to say that Fiona Hayes joins us now to talk us through how it all played out. Fiona, it really was a much needed win, but I think that they do, they deserve a lot of credit because they fixed a lot of what went wrong against Spain.
Yeah, Marie, it was, I suppose it was a very disappointing week for the girls, but they had to get over that Spain loss and get on with the work. And we definitely see that they put in a performance yesterday. It was actually an exciting game, Europa, I thought, and I was very, very impressed with their defence in particular. I thought they were quite excellent at times. Line speed was amazing to watch and it improved in that a lot.
Yeah, Ciara Griffin was talking afterwards and that was one thing that she said that they really worked hard on during the week with Kieran Hallett, their defence coach. She just said that they tried to make it a lot more organised and they needed to be a lot more composed and they really were. I don't think really we can say that they fixed everything because they still have a huge amount of work to do. And look, one thing that really stood out was probably their set-piece play and in particular their line-out, Fiona. They do need to get working on that as well.
Yeah, that's it. It was quite disappointing to see that. I mean, they'd improved in a lot of areas around the pitch, but I'm a lover of the set piece. I'm addicted to the scrum, love watching it, love line out. And I was just, I thought at times they definitely fixed that scrum a little bit. They won a couple of scrum penalties, but they literally have a lot more work to do in the line-out. There was a couple of overthrows, a few mislifts. That's time, and I know Sam Monaghan had come into the second row, and even if Sam wasn't there, and she would have been a big leader in that kind of line-out at times. So I suppose that would have had something particularly to do with it. But she had an amazing game around the park, but definitely we could see there was a few little things to be worked on before they have Scotland now on Saturday.
So you are now a self-confessed set-piece addict. So if you're looking at that line-out, because I think that probably was the one that really stood out, can they fix it now in such a short space of time? And what do they need to do?
Yeah, to be honest with you, you'd watch teams and, you know, and I've seen a lot of the girls train and I've played with the girls and stuff like that can just flow so smoothly off a camp. You actually wouldn't even think it's an issue. And when you go into a game, if one thing goes wrong, it tends to go downhill from there and it's definitely fixable. I think for me what happened was at times you could see they were getting a little bit stressed, they might not have heard the call, the lifts were too early. or the throw was kind of just a bit over the top, but it's very easily fixable. They would have spent a lot of time at camp. They'd be training really hard up there and would have spent a lot of time at that. And from what in talking to the girls that have been up there, there wasn't issues, you know, with that line-out. But when another team comes up against you, that's when, I suppose, issues come into place. And to be fair to Italy, they had done their homework and they picked Ireland off a few times. So it's about getting more options around that. And when that's happening in the game, how we can fix it in that heat of the moment.
As well, Fiona, like, when you think about it, it's just been training for so long that it's going to take a little bit of time to adjust to the intensity of a game. And it, when you look at the results as well over the last couple of weekends of it, really, like, it's taken everyone a little bit of time as well to find their feet. And then you add in that pressure of everybody really wanting those coveted World Cup places. Everybody wants to be there, especially, I think, after a lockdown and everything was taken away, and there was probably a reality check that, you know, things might change again in the future. Who knows what's going to happen? And you just put so much value on everything that the pressure was massive on this team heading into the game, and it was always going to be a huge ask for them to come out and give us a performance in that first game.
Definitely, I mean, the pressure was huge. They might have kind of at times, I felt in that game, maybe overlooked Spain decision making wise, when I thought maybe that we could have taken a few points in front of the post. We might have kicked to the corner because we might have backed our maul, or we might have thought that we would get our pack over. Whereas I think they were a lot cleverer in this game. When it was 5-7 and Ciara pointed the post, I think it was probably the best decision she made. Put Ireland 8-7 in front, and it kind of, that relaxes the team, you know, and then you can move on and go for there when the tries have come. So I think, kind of looking at it, they mightn't have maybe made the best decisions in the first game, but you look at that, you review it, and definitely I think in that second game it definitely was kicking for Ireland, and I could see they were up for it, and it was absolutely brilliant to watch them take control from such a stressful week, I'd imagine, looking at stuff that was going on back home.
Yeah, that's for sure, because I think they, you know, when you're in professional women or women's sport at elite level, like, you want the analysis, you want the coverage, but you have to take the good with the bad. And last week would have been a really tough week for them, because it would have been a huge amount of criticism. But just to see how they reacted to it has been really, really brilliant. What about Claire Malloy, though, Fiona? Do we need to be seeing more of her?
You're going to catch me out here, but
I wouldn't do that to Fiona.
So. I personally think so. I mean, I've played with Claire for years. I mean, around any women's rugby, anyone you talk to around the world, they'll have heard of Claire Malloy. She's an absolute terror at seven. That's not taken away from anyone that is there, but I just think she offers that extra bit of bite, and that's what she brings. I you know, you've players at times where you just give them a license and you say, look, you do you. There's a system there, but you can kind of come out of that system. And Claire was one of those players. You just backed her to have those big turnover moments. Absolutely animal in defence. And I think I'd love to see her, and I think she would thrive in a starting jersey against, in that Scotland game especially.
Yeah, well, hopefully we will see her. Look, we're starting to see a bit of consistency as well in that team, and 10 is somewhere that, look, I'd say everybody has been crying out to see somebody in that jersey, take hold of it, to grab that jersey really and make it their own. But it's not an easy thing to do, and I think especially when you look at some of the players that we've had, they've been transferring over from other sports as well, mm-hmm. and that's going to take a little bit of time to try and get to the speed of the game and to the pace of rugby at that level. But Stacey Flood is stepping up, and she's doing the very best that she can to make that jersey her own.
Definitely. I mean, we've been looking at it for years. Anyone involved is like, are they going to stick with a 10? We're going through 10. But every so often, it was completely changed again. So to see her there and see her performing at a high level. And I think the big thing for me in watching her is her kicking game. It's absolutely massive. I mean, we had, back in the day with Ireland, we'd be freaks. She had that boot that just got us out of trouble. And I think Stacey can offer that as well. And especially with the new laws that are 50-22, she's someone that can really exploit that, and it's kind of exciting watching it. If we can get playing off her, you know, at times I find she might go wide too quickly, and as she gets into that game and the more she starts to play, she'll understand that kind of 15th game, because she has been playing sevens where they go wide immediately and exploit it. But I think with each game she's growing and growing.
Yeah, definitely. And we have to we can't go without having a word for Beavan Parsons, the absolute superstar that she is.
Absolutely. What an exciting time for Connacht Rugby as well. I mean, she's just a lovely girl, and just a really good player to watch. I mean, she's been compared to Ali Miller in the past, and I think she's got that. She's just an amazing step. She's got the drive. She's got the skill as well, you know. And for a winger, you know, you see her out there, there might be 2 metres of space to work with. She rarely gets pushed into touch. Her feet can just dance her up that touchline, and that's what's exciting to watch. And we saw it in her victory in that Amy Lee try. She absolutely worked the outside like amazing. She were absolutely bouncing off the Italian season in Westminster.
Fiona, brilliant. Thanks a million. And we will check in with you for sure over the next little while. Enjoy the break if you're on your holidays.
A bit of sun, Marie. The old ginger head is right now, but yeah, loving it. Thanks a million.
Talk to you soon.
Game on 2FM with Green Fern. Have your dinner ready in a flash with Green Fern's high protein cooked chicken breast fillet, available in selected stores nationwide.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back to Game On with Marie Crowe, and as you probably heard, Alan Cawley is here with me live in studio. We are building up to the Republic of Ireland women's game against Australia tomorrow at Tallaght Stadium. It is a friendly, but it still feels like a pretty big game. Tony O'Donoghue caught up with manager Vera Powell to talk how it's going to go.
Game On Football.
Vera, you were probably hoping that you'd have had one game down in World Cup qualifying and 3 points in the bag against Georgia. Instead, a glamour game, you could say, against Australia, but a tough test nonetheless.
Very tough. But if you have fear of failure, you will never succeed. That's our slogan of our process. So we have no fear, but we do respect them a lot because they give so much pressure and they're so good in that. So if you make one little mistake, it's a goal against. But that is what we need to get ready for our game against Sweden. And of course, we wanted to have finally a win. On the other hand, we have chosen our opponents to grow and to get better. And what I said before, you will not grow if you go for points and have the press happy or have other people happy. What counts is if we qualify for the World Cup. And the choice of opponents is related to that.
So that is the ultimate goal, of course, our first qualification for a tournament.
Yeah.
But you've had 7 consecutive defeats.
Yeah.
And you know, anyone would probably tell you that Australia would be likely to beat Ireland. What'll that do for the confidence of this squad?
You know, confidence grows if you have knowledge of the task under the highest pressure. And that experience is what we try to get. That brings confidence, not winning 5-0 against a team ranked 50 in the world. That will not bring confidence. Confidence brings that you feel that you grow, that you get better, that you can together in your teamwork, that you can cope with any opponent, that you can stop them from going forward, that you can get the best out of yourself and your own players. So that is why when we got this opportunity to play Australia, we say yes. We didn't think of 7 defeats. We only think of getting better, and because that is how you qualify for the World Cup, and that is our goal.
But if 7 defeats becomes 8, and then you've got Sweden, and then you've got
9.
Finland.
Yeah, could be 10.
And as Stephen Kenny has found out, you know, if you keep going without winning games, it's going to increase the pressure on you.
I never feel pressure in that sense. I'm here because we have a great situation. I've extended my contract because everybody wanted me to extend it. And that is what it is. And as soon as that's not the case anymore, then... Yeah, even good friends. No harsh words about that.
So what are your thoughts on World Cup qualification? Because, you know, it's a difficult group. Sweden are ranked 2nd in the world. Finland, 25th. I mean, these are countries that would probably expect to beat Ireland.
Yeah, and especially because they both have so much experience. Also Finland, they have qualified for the European Championship, so they will go next year to England. And we not. And of the defeats that we had, we can only say Ukraine away, that has been that has been the crucial one. And we all know that we played also there well. So we think that we can give them a game. We really think we can give them a game. We've showed it against Denmark, against Belgium, hopefully tomorrow also. And we'll see where we get. But this team has so much in itself. This team is only growing and it's getting better and better and better. If you see the competition that we have, we are missing now 11 players with injuries. There came 11 players in with injuries. everybody's off the sheet. Our medical staff has done a fantastic job. And we are now on the fringe of playing an opponent that is fourth in the world, if I'm correct. So, yeah, we can only grow from that. And it's a broader squad, and there's new players in, and there's other players gaining experience. And that brings us to where we want to be.
I think they might be ranked 11th, but they were fourth in the Olympics, certainly, yeah. And they were very narrowly defeated.
Yeah, sorry, they were fourth in the Olympics, and they're ranked 11th in the world.
Yeah, yeah. And a player like Sam Kerr, who yeah. will be making her 100th appearance for Australia, yeah. and looking for a 50th goal as well.
Yeah, but how good is that you can play a star like her? You only can get better of it, and it's a friendly, so why would we not do that? It would be not smart to play an opponent that we win easily, because we want to go to the World Cup and we want to grow. That's what we want.
I believe the full capacity for tomorrow will be achieved, 4,000 fans, so that
looks
be nice
like
to have people back in the stadium.
Yeah, fantastic, and it looks like it will be a sold-out fixture, so that's amazing, because it could only go on the tickets could only go on sale last week, this week actually, because of all the hassle that we had with COVID. So yeah, fantastic, looking forward so much to it.
Ruisha Littlejohn is going to be missing, I understand.
Also, yeah.
Yeah, so you've got some decisions to make, but in one of the more important positions, in the goalkeeper position, have you decided yet who's your number one?
At this moment, there's one clear number one, yeah.
Okay, and you're going to wait until tomorrow before you let us know.
Yeah, it will be absolutely clear, but you don't know if something happens now. It's not that I don't want to tell you, but you never know if in the last training something happens, so I'll keep that to tomorrow.
There's been a lot of progression, a lot more visibility from this particular squad as well, and this will be the first international that there'll be equal pay for the women.
Yeah.
How important has all of that been around the development of the squad?
I think that can only give a boost to the development. It brings responsibilities, it brings also stability in the team, it brings that we have more rest, that we do not only train but also have rest, because they might can get take off a few hours in the week. So it's all growing, everything is growing, and this is part of that whole process.
Game on, football.
Now we'll be continuing our build-up to the Republic of Ireland women against Australia tomorrow, but that was Vera Powell speaking to Tony O'Donoghue. Alan Cawley is with me in studio. Alan, you're going to be rushing off because there is a game tonight in the SSE Electricity League Premier Division with Derry facing Bowes. So it's fourth place Derry playing fifth place Bowes.
Yeah, a huge game, Marie. I'm heading over to it this evening. I'm looking forward to it as well. As you say, two form teams since Rory Higgins has taken over at Derry. He's after bringing them up to fourth position, as you said, so he's done really, really well. And Bowes themselves, who are coming off the back of a great run in Europe, but they want desperately to get back into those European positions. And at the moment, Marie, they're sitting on 37 points, 8 points behind Sligo Rovers, but they do have three games in hand. So if they were to win those three games, obviously they'll go a point ahead of Sligo Rovers, starting with a huge game tonight against Derry as well. So there's a lot at stake, and I'm really looking forward to it.
Okay, well, Alan, thank you so much for coming in. We'll be back tomorrow. Ruby will be with us to look at how Listowel is going, and we'll also be previewing the Ryder Cup. So do join us. Tara Stewart, Tara Kumar is up next.
Green Farm. Get back on track after summer with Green Farm's high protein cooked chicken breast fillet range. Available in selected stores nationwide.